Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On this show, we're joined by Botanix Labs. Willem Schroe, the CEO and founder of Botanix, is joining us to talk about spider chains. Spider chains are a novel use case to build layer twos and other applications on top of Bitcoin. It's a pretty technical subject, but it's important for miners because this project is already live. It doesn't require any changes to Bitcoin to get off the ground, and it could attract additional use cases of Bitcoin, which would increase Bitcoin fees. Botanix Labs did just launch their testnet for this project, so go check it out. We'll include the link in the show notes below. But first, two other announcements. We do have an immersion mini-series coming up with two experts. I'm not even on the shows. We've got these guys running the podcast for us. We're talking to a lot of different people within the immersion space. Those shows will be coming out starting next week, so look forward to those. Lastly, check out our new newsletter. We're really pushing that right now. If you give it a subscription, that would really help. You can see it below in the show notes as well. Go give that a subscription. Okay, a word from our sponsors, and then we'll get into the show with Botanix. Thanks. Did you know that you can make more money by merge mining other networks? Check out makemoremoneymining.com for information on BIPs 300 and 301, a proposal to bring more revenue to Bitcoin miners through sidechains and merge mining called drive chains. Increase your mining revenues and learn more about participating in Bitcoin governance by visiting makemoremoneymining.com. Are you a miner who wants to activate Bitcoin improvements? Check out activation.watch. See what Bitcoin improvements the Bitcoin community, developers, and miners are considering, and show support by signaling for one of many BIPs up for consideration. Activation.watch. Is your mining operation happening ready? Take control of your own future with the right energy strategy. Linkcoin Energy Trading Platform is a tool used by miners to design, monitor, and seamlessly orchestrate sophisticated energy strategies within electricity markets such as ERCOT, New York, and PJM. Avoid penalties, participate in demand response programs, and capture hundreds of thousands of dollars per megawatt per year by deploying the right block and index strategy. Secure your competitive edge at linkcoin.com. Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Welcome back to the Mining Pod. We have Botanix Labs on the show. Willem Schroe, welcome to the Mining Pod.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, excited for today's conversation. You guys popped into the spotlight this last fall slash winter with a new project being built on top of Bitcoin that doesn't necessitate any changes to the underlying Bitcoin stack itself to work. It's an EVM compatible side chain of sorts. I'm going to let you dive into all the technical features of this and all the different ways that we can kind of label this. But first, let's go into a bio about yourself, how you got into Bitcoin, and how you got into building your project.
Sounds good. Perfect. So Willem grew up in Belgium, lived most of my life there, actually. Got a mathematics background, or became third in national mathematics competition. Then I ended up doing electrical engineering. There researched a bit in cryptography, actually in encryption. That was actually my first touch points with Bitcoin. So in my cryptography classes, we looked at how Bitcoin worked. Very interestingly, I didn't see the full picture yet. So I didn't put the macroeconomics and the Austrian economics together yet. And then basically went totally on a different path. Started working in chemicals, in oil and gas, actually. So I do know a little bit about the commodities markets and the competition there. Then moved to Saudi Arabia. And it's there in the Middle East that I fully fell down a rabbit hole. Basically saw hyperinflation happening in Lebanon. Saw people get their bank accounts seized. And then that was like the point where you put one and one really, really big together. So then I became a massive Bitcoiner and basically told myself I need to help this space forward as fast as possible.
Now, jumping into Botanix Labs itself, your past within Bitcoin has sort of been all over the spectrum, which has led you to understand like Ethereum and EVM compatibility and all these other projects that are adjacent or not part of Bitcoin. Tell me a little bit about that, how you got from like that sort of part of the ecosystem back into Bitcoin itself.
Yeah, no, actually mostly stayed within Bitcoin. So I started off as hardcore Bitcoiner, so to speak, but basically the last bull run, I basically looked throughout the rest of the market And I saw a lot of different things happening. I saw a lot of different products reach product market fit on the Ethereum space and a lot of applications. And I saw that nothing of that was actually really built on Bitcoin. And I was trying to figure out, where is this whole space of crypto going to go to 10 years from now? And so what I saw happening is, yeah, Bitcoin, of course, the most decentralized, most secure money in the world, like really permissionless money. But at the same time, I saw these applications being built on Ethereum or dApps, and I saw tokens getting there and DEXs. I realized that tokens and DEXs are basically stock markets, and better stock markets than we have today. Like, why can someone, I don't know, in Egypt probably has problems buying stock in the New York Stock Exchange? And those tokens, which can represent companies, for example, is like a better version of decentralized stock markets. So I saw that happening. So I reached that as a potential use case. I saw NFTs reach product market fit. So basically digital collectibles that people like to have. And so I was like, okay, all of these things reach product market fit, but they're not on Bitcoin. And then I realized, okay, all of these things need to come to Bitcoin at some point. And that's a little bit how I came up with the idea for Botanix. Basically, how I call it is like three different technology battles, as I typically call it. On the one hand, I call it the layer one battle, like which layer ones of all of these makes the most sense. Of course, the first principle there is decentralization. Bitcoin is most decentralized. It makes the most sense to have that as a global reserve currency. But then there's a second technology battle, which I call the virtual machine battle. Now you need virtual machines to build all of these applications. Now you've got a bunch of different virtual machines. Liquid has one, Stax has one, Solana has one. And of course you have the EVM, which is powered by Ethereum. And so I was wondering which of all these virtual machines makes the most sense and probably has the biggest likelihood of winning out the virtual machine technology battle, which is a completely different technology battle than the currency battle, right? Like a virtual machine, there's no currency in there. The EVM, there's no currency. You have to separate Ethereum from the EVM. You have Ethereum, the asset, and you have EVM, which is the virtual machine technology. And so I realized there that the EVM is like way ahead of anyone else in terms of tooling, in terms of applications, in terms of libraries, etc. Might not be the best virtual machine. I think most engineers actually agree on that. But it's like so far ahead in terms of like distribution and just development. And then the third technology battle is, how do you scale the whole of crypto to 7 billion people? And there it makes the most sense, actually, from a security perspective, to build in layers on top of each other or to build sidechains on Bitcoin. And so basically bringing the whole thing together, I was like, okay, a second layer EVM on Bitcoin can basically start powering the whole world, or like financial markets built on Bitcoin. And that's where we need to go. Like, you need to, if you have Bitcoin as a reserve currency in the world, you need all of that to be built on Bitcoin. And I think a second layer EVM on Bitcoin can actually power that.
Yeah, I came from the other side. I kind of started as a Bitcoiner and then mostly moved into the Ethereum space for a while and covered that at CoinDesk for 2 years. So very knowledgeable, I should say, of like that part of the ecosystem. I can't build anything, but I know what you're talking about pretty in depth, and agree with you. The EVM has a monopoly, I guess is probably the best word, in terms of smart contract chains, like how they're going to build. There's a few other VM designs out there, but they've never really actually made it. I think like eWASM with, was it sort of the P? I have a pillow with it somewhere in here. Oh, Polkadot. Yeah, I have a Polkadot pillow in my apartment. But they tried to make a different EVM and it just like didn't work, right? Or a different VM, I should say, eWASM. And no one really adopted it. And so that really matters for all these different libraries and for all these different applications, the tooling that people are trying to build. It's already out there. For Botanix, would you guys be able to bring that over like pretty readily, or how many sort of changes would you guys have to make this compatible? I know you guys just launched a testnet recently, so that might feed into this a bit.
Yeah. No, the interesting thing is that we're fully equivalent in the sense that, yeah, we actually literally just forked Ethereum itself, like a Rust implementation of Ethereum. And we didn't actually make any changes on that, on the EVM part. And so basically the interesting part is this, and I think a lot of people are underestimating the power of the EVM, but you can take any application you see on Ethereum, you can copy that Solidity smart contract, and you can deploy it on Botanix, which is, yeah, basically deploying it on Bitcoin. And so that takes you, I don't know, like 20 minutes. The hardest lift here is actually building the front end, et cetera, and the infrastructure. But the actual smart contract, it's a copy and paste, and that's really a massive power. So suddenly all those audited smart contracts that you've seen are just a copy paste and you deploy it on Botanix, which is actually extremely powerful, like block explorers, et cetera, and wallets, MetaMask works natively. So everything just like immediately works. And it's hard to imagine that, but to see it play out, we have a DEX deployed right now, which is like a Uniswap V2 fork. And that was just deployed, I don't know, like in 20 minutes, which is absolutely insane. So I can deploy new tokens there like in 5 minutes. We actually have a guide on our website how to deploy a token on Botanix in 5 minutes because it just all becomes so easy. So it's incredibly powerful.
Okay, let's go over a few more specifications on the technical front and then go to the security model, which for listeners is basically like, how do we tie Bitcoin into another system and make sure that the trust assumptions are equivalent with Bitcoin, better than Bitcoin, or at least disclose that they're not as good as Bitcoin. And then from there, we're definitely going to go into some of the stuff as it pertains to Bitcoin miners and fees. I think, you know, most of the listeners on this show are going to be concerned about how this like ties into their mining operation. But going back to you, tell me a little bit about like the peg-in process, the construction of the sidechain itself, or whatever sort of terms you want to use for it. And then tell me about like the block times and some of those finer details.
Okay, a lot of different questions. Let me start with the peg-in. So I'll start with the peg-in from a user perspective, because we actually optimized for that a little bit and Taproot enabled a lot of that. So when you want to peg-in into Botanix, we basically generate, there's this, what we call the bridge. It's very similar to like an Arbitrum. You go to that page, you connect your MetaMask, which gives you, which gives us the EVM address. With that EVM address, we hide that in a Taproot tree in the Bitcoin address. And so we just give you back a normal Taproot Bitcoin address. And for pegging in, you basically can then send Bitcoin from any cold wallet, any hot wallet, any exchange, just to that Taproot address. And because of your EVM address, we know that's your address. So you get Bitcoin back on the sidechain. So now you have Bitcoin on the sidechain. And then the peg out actually works very similar. You basically burn or you send the Bitcoin to a burn contract. The confirmation of that burning basically allows you to have the Bitcoin released from the spider chain. And then you get it back into your wallet. And that's the peg out, basically. And so you might have noticed I've set the spider chain here. That's basically how the technology of the second layer actually works. Because now, of course, you're wondering like, okay, I sent this Bitcoin to a certain address and it's not mine. Okay, I got my Bitcoin now on Botanix on the sidechain. But where does this actually sit on Bitcoin main chain? And that's, yeah, one of the very big improvements that we, or like a big breakthrough that we came up with from a cryptography perspective is what we call decentralized multisigs. So this multisig is actually a big multisig. For example, let me clarify this. Like, for example, 100 participants secure one single multisig. But there's not just one multisig, there's multiple. And so you create actually a chain of different multisigs. And for example, so we run a proof of stake on Botanix, where you stake Bitcoin on Bitcoin. And for example, there's 10,000 node runners, 10,000 stakers that all run a full node. Then one single multisig, you will randomly choose 100 participants out of the 10,000, and they will secure one single multisig. And then for the second multisig, again, you will choose another random 100 people out of the 10,000 stakers, and they will secure another multisig. And so you create this network of decentralized multisigs, where no one actually controls the multisigs, but it's actually a shared security model between all the different stakers. And so that basically is the basis of the security model of the spider chain.
So for that, what sort of other projects did you guys look at as being instructive here to me, this kind of brings to mind some like the MPC schemes we've seen on Ethereum, where you try to like break up the keys and kind of spread them out everywhere, have like a lot of different participants adding randomness to a multi-sig when you're launching it. I've also seen some other designs where you have like sharded security, things like that. So what kind of projects have you guys looked at as being instructive here?
Yeah, I think one of the limits is, of course, you need to build it on Bitcoin, which is, of course, puts you in a limited box. But with Taproot, you can create these bigger multisig sizes, so Frost multisigs, which basically allows for these big multisig sizes for like 100. I think in general, most of the inspiration actually came from like the Lightning Network. I basically went down and took, read all the white papers of all different layer twos, of all different rollups, and basically came to the conclusion that a lot of layer twos are actually extremely centralized. And longer term, that will result in a lot of different issues. Even if you have a ZK rollup, it's still a centralized party running it. And so the government can basically censor anyone. And it's really hard to solve those problems. There's some ideas out there to basically, create some type of models. But basically, then you're like patching something that might already have been broken in the beginning. And I realized that actually the Lightning Network is the most decentralized or the only decentralized layer two. And in essence, what the Lightning Network actually is a 2 out of 2 multisig. But it's a distributed network of 2 out of 2 multisigs. And now expand from that. What if you basically on the Lightning Network consider your Bitcoin on the Lightning Network and you stake that on the Lightning Network? Then you start having a staking set on the Lightning Network. And that can basically secure an EVM. And that was the basics behind the Spider Chain now. Like, why don't you create a decentralized set of multisigs between all random participants, and that secures the EVM or the sidechain. And so that was actually the biggest inspiration, which sounds super weird because, of course, we are a smart contract sidechain while Lightning is optimized for payments. But once you go into like the technologies, that was very interesting how we ended up with that.
That's super interesting. I did not expect that answer. One thing about poke into a little bit more is the L2 schemes. So we're seeing like a lot of different people try to build on Bitcoin right now, a few different ideas. It's tough, and a lot of these things don't work because Bitcoin doesn't have the expressivity that other chains do. And then on top of that, like you said, a lot of the solutions are in themselves imperfect. So you mentioned ZK rollups. We can throw like optimistic rollups in there. You do have some trust assumptions. There's some centralization within like the sequencers or whoever's batching things, and like then you have questions about like the main chain, and for Bitcoin, would they be able to censor whatever's happening with the rollup? Miners here obviously would be a very important party. Like they could arguably like censor some of these things. We look at drive chains. There's been similar critiques. So when it came to your design, what sort of things are sort of red flags you're looking at? What are some trust assumptions? And then what are some things that like are better than those? So articulated a few there, but I'm interested to like kind of narrow down that scope. Like, what are we trusting within a spider chain, or what are we not trusting?
Yeah, very good question. So this is very surprising to me that if you read a lot of white papers, that no one really talks about like their trust assumptions or their attack models. And that really surprises me. And that's like a massive red flag for me as coming from cryptography. Like, you need to be really honest, like, what are your attack factors? And so the interesting thing is, if you go through the white paper in the spider chain, I don't know, we speak like quite a few sections about all the different attacks and how you basically cover that. Because I always try to think about like, what are the different attack factors you can have? And so we're also very honest about our trust assumption. So basically, we run a proof of stake, which also means, especially in the beginning when there's very little Bitcoin staked, let's say there's only 100 Bitcoin staked, someone can come in and take over 95% of the stake, for example. At that moment, the previous Bitcoin secured is still safe. That's something called forward security. We can go into that later, which is actually comes from encryption. But actually at that point, so someone takes over 95% of the stake. From then onwards, all the future multisigs that are being generated basically the one party that has 95% of the stake basically has control over those and can steal the Bitcoin. And that's the big trust assumption. And that's basically why, also in the beginning, we'll have to start off permissioned. Basically, we want to know who are going to be the first stakers. We'll work together with some selected parties. This is maybe an outreach. If there's any Bitcoin miners that have some Bitcoin, that want to earn a yield on their Bitcoin, because of course all the transaction fees and staking rewards in Bitcoin will go back to the stakers. And you want a partner, feel free to reach out. But basically, our initial set will be selected amount of people that we trust. Basically, investors, big Bitcoin holders, will work together with one liquid staking providers, and then we can grow the stake. And so, for example, once you're over, I don't know, like tens of thousands of Bitcoin staked, then the trust assumption becomes very clear, and everyone can basically see how decentralized the network is. And so that basically takes away the trust assumptions.
Love it. Okay, I'm going to ask one more question on trust assumptions and the security model here, and then we'll move on to talking about some applications. So MEV, big topic, has been for quite a while in the Ethereum culture, Ethereum ecosystem. For Bitcoin, that's kicking off more and more. I think Drive Chains kind of brought that to the forefront. People wondering, like, you know, if miners are able to censor or earn additional yield from messing with the next layer up, what does that look like? And what's the underlying issues we're going to see on the base layer? So in this case, if we do see transaction ordering or sandwich tax, things like that on a spider chain, how does that go about? What does that really, really mean for Bitcoin? And what does that mean for spider chain?
I think, let me separate that question. I think on Bitcoin, the main layer, we will see way more MEV happening, I think. Yeah, the more ordinals and inscriptions and BRC20s you're going to see, I think there will be way more MEV attacks, so to speak. And it's very hard, actually, to protect yourself against that. Also, for us on Botanix, we will be vulnerable to MEV attacks, same as on Ethereum itself. And I'm actually, like, we haven't spent a huge amount of research on it because of limited resources, of course. But we are absolutely following what's happening in the MEV world, if there's like solutions to it, etc.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's one of the most interesting topics to me. I mean, I started talking about Bitcoin MEV back in like 2020, 2021 with some of the people who were like working on it, like Robert Miller at Flashbot, stuff like that. Because it's such an interesting topic, I thought that would come to Bitcoin at some point, because there's the incentives, right? And we're seeing it right now with ordinals and inscriptions. Yesterday, even we had Ocean Protocol sort of officially announced that they're going to start censoring inscriptions. And I see that as just like more broadly, a instance of MEV on Bitcoin, where some are participating in something, some are not participating in something. We've even seen this when some of the ordinals have dropped, like the mints have occurred, where some people will race ahead to get that block. Any thoughts on that really quick? We're going to take a side road for a second. I want to get your thoughts on some of these like adjacent Bitcoin topics that are occurring right now. Any thoughts on inscriptions?
So on inscriptions itself, I think it's very cool to see it play out. I think Andrew Pulsar probably wrote the best on it. Like, we need data on the Bitcoin main layer, and makes the most sense if people want to inscribe random things on it. Perfect, that's fine. It's what it's designed for. And it's actually cool to see applications and utility being built on Bitcoin. It's like I said, if we want to go to a world where everything runs on Bitcoin, we need that. So I'm in the camp of like, yes, very happy that people are building utility or inscriptions on Bitcoin. The use case might be questionable, but I'm happy that it's happening. On the other hand, I think it's really beautiful to also really see it play out. Like, this is the real free market in the world. You see the free market at play. Like, people, it's permission, so people will try different things. And that's like how, yeah, development happens. Like, someone will try things out, it works or it doesn't work, and then basically you go from there. And I think ocean mining also is a part of that. It's like it's a free market at play. Some people don't like it and want to start censoring, and then the free market will answer that. I think their fee rates are way lower, I'm quite sure a lot of people won't really like that or don't want to pay for that. So there's an actual cost to it, which is actually, I find it really beautiful to see it play out.
There's something sort of interesting between your project and Inscriptions, in the sense that Inscriptions didn't need any changes to Bitcoin. Taproot was implemented and past soft forks also allowed this, obviously. So it's been around for a while. We just didn't really know about it. There wasn't some sort of like BIP that came along and said like, we need this for Inscriptions to happen. Same thing with Botanix. You guys aren't asking for a BIP or anything. You guys are just like building it, right? So from a builder's perspective, what do you think about BIPs? What do you think about changes to the base layer in order to get Bitcoin to be more expressive and support functionality like rollups or like drive chains, things like that? Do you think it's important that we keep adding BIPs like that, or are you pretty happy with like where Bitcoin's at?
That's a double answer. I think we should keep improving, but also a very big believer that the longer Bitcoin survives, the Lindy effect becomes very important. So you don't want to make that many big changes. Like one of the reasons that Bitcoin is an actual real decentralized secure money is because that isn't happening. So you have this trade-off between like, yes, we want more or like a better version and we need to keep improving Bitcoin. But on the other hand, you don't want to make changes because that could impact the decentralization and the security. I think it would be nice to see a covenant at some point. Now there's a lot of different proposals. I think a lot of or more people are starting to get like in favor of that. On drive chains, I'm not sure what the consensus is these days. But in general, like you said, we are just building. We don't need a soft fork. We can build it on Bitcoin like it is today. So I hope a lot of people will enjoy that, that we don't need any changes to it. But yeah, that's my general thoughts. I think having a covenant would improve a lot of development, either for Lightning or like Arc or like any other of the other applications or like ZK rollups. I'm not sure which of the covenants would be the best one. But I also am a very big believer in the importance of the Lindy effect and taking things slow and be very conscious on what we do with Bitcoin. Because it's an incredible asset. You don't want to throw away this incredible technology basically that is absolutely going to change the world and make some quick, hasty decisions.
Definitely. Okay, let's go over to applications for Botanix and Spider Chains itself. What sort of projects are you guys looking to attract or build yourselves on top of Spider Chains at the moment?
Yeah, that's a very broad question. I actually love it because it's an extremely hard question that I've been breaking my mind over the last few months. Because now that it became clear that we can actually do it from a technology perspective, that we got the testnet. The next question is, of course, then like, how are you going to build projects? And I think we have failed in that in Bitcoin. Like the adoption of Liquid rootstock has been very limited. And so I want to make sure that we take it very consciously on like how we approach the business side of things. And it's hard because basically when you have a fully equivalent EVM, you can bring any application from Ethereum and build it on top of Botanix and Bitcoin. Now, I don't know, there's thousands of applications. So which one do you choose? Which one do you go for? And I think longer term, most of them will absolutely come over as well. But I think where we have landed is in like the bigger markets, in the sense that you could have a DEX. We already have a DEX. I think that allows for a lot of trading, which creates a lot of fees and a lot of activity, which creates Bitcoin staking rewards. Once you have Bitcoin staking rewards, the stake will go up. The security level goes up. The chain is perceived more secure, which creates more development, and you start that flywheel. But in the beginning, we're thinking about DEXs. DeFi is an obvious one. I think one of the reasons we haven't seen DeFi breakthrough is because you need a lot of different components in DeFi. For example, you need a DEX, you need an Oracle there, which is very important. You need basically a lending market, you need a stable coin, and you need all of these pieces to be present. So to be more specific, absolutely a stable coin, very, very needed on Bitcoin. So that could come in like an algorithmic stable coin, like a MakerDAO. Then you want a DEX to start trading tokens. then you want like a perp trading. I think a lot of Bitcoiners would want to leverage Bitcoin or trade Bitcoin. And so you can think about like a GMX or a DYDX application, which again brings a lot of trading fees or transactions, which gives you Bitcoin yield. And then you can have an NFT marketplace, which becomes very easy to like start trading Bitcoin NFTs. Maybe some people will like that more. That happens on the second layer and not on the base layer. And then basically, I think those should be around seven that we're basically looking at. And then I think we have the whole ecosystem. So stablecoins, which is like a MakerDAO lending platform to lend against your Bitcoin. Who doesn't want to lend stablecoins against their Bitcoin, for example? A trading like a GMX, a DEX like Uniswap, and an Oracle. And then you've got a very vibrant ecosystem.
The full plate. We want all of it. We want all the food. I like that. Let's talk a little bit about like what that means for Bitcoin culture, because that would be very different from what we see right now. Like people are pretty happy with Lightning and most people are okay with Bitcoin being boring, but it seems increasingly clear that there's going to be more coming to Bitcoin one way or another, at the very least with inscriptions. And with you guys getting your project off the ground, the fact that it doesn't require any changes to Bitcoin, things are going to be built. What do you think that does to Bitcoin culture? Like, what does it look like next bull cycle when people are just launching DEXs with tokens attached to them or launching stable coins?
Yes, that's going to be very interesting to see play out. Actually, the longer I am in Bitcoin, I also start to realize that Bitcoin culture is very diverse and you've got a lot of different pillars in there. You've got the extreme libertarians, you've got the only stake eaters, you've got the seed oil haters. And so you've got a lot of different pillars in the whole of Bitcoin. But yeah, what combines all of them is like free thinking. I think we're all independent minds. And that's why we landed on Bitcoin. But probably when you refer to Bitcoin culture, I think what you're more referring to is like really having Bitcoin only, no tokens, nothing else. And that's like, yeah, slowly changing. I think Ordinals changed that quite a bit. And now suddenly you have multiple bigger camps. I guess in the Bitcoin culture, you'll have like the people who don't want anything else and consider everything else an attack on Bitcoin. And we've got the people who like Ordinals and tokens be deployed on Bitcoin. But actually, for me personally, I think it comes down to the whole world is going to be built on Bitcoin. And so you're going to have the casinos being built on Bitcoin. You're going to have the stock markets being built on Bitcoin. And so those tokens, they are going to come there. And I think Bitcoin culture, after a while, will like come around and basically no longer see those tokens as an attack on Bitcoin. Like initially, I think Bitcoin culture, or at least some period of time, I thought, okay, outside of Bitcoin, like all the other tokens is what's considered an attack on Bitcoin. I think the more of that is being built on Bitcoin, people start to realize this is actually really good to Bitcoin, because the next bull run, retail comes in. What does retail typically do? They don't really know about anything. They just buy Bitcoin and then they start asking like, wait, what are all these other things? Let me try buy of that. And then basically then a lot of them eventually get scammed. But if everything is built on Bitcoin, that's maybe where it ends. That's maybe where they then say like, oh, all these other tokens, that's actually not really Bitcoin. They're built on Bitcoin. And so you can start to differentiate between like Bitcoin and basically the rest. So I think this will actually be really good for the next bull run, or really good for Bitcoin.
I'm a huge fan of this idea. I want to talk about stablecoins for 1 second. I had Paulo from Tether on the show about a month ago at this point, and I asked him a bit about building stablecoins on top of Bitcoin. And so, of course, Tether kind of got its start building Omni protocol, which has more or less been sunset. And they've moved mostly to Ethereum and Tron at this point. Yet they're, as a company, highly aligned, at least publicly, with Bitcoin, right? They mine Bitcoin, they buy Bitcoin for their treasury. They're huge Bitcoin fans. They got like a whole Tether Bitcoin gang going on. From a Botanics perspective, how do you sort of bring in a player like that? How do you bring in other stable coins like a Tether or something like that to build on Botanics? Have you thought about it that far? I know the MakerDAO point, like that's a decentralized stable coin. So that comes down to like a community wanting to build a coin. but the largest stable coins are corporations typically. So have you thought about like how you could bring in like a USDC or a Tether or something like that?
Yes, that is a very good question. And I always thought like a few months ago, I was like, the only thing we actually need on Botanix is a stablecoin. And so the most obvious question is like, how do we actually convince a Tether or a USDC? And I actually know that Tether, they're big Bitcoiners. I think some of them live in El Salvador as well. And so I've been wondering a lot about that. So I haven't been able to get in contact with Paolo or Tether. And I think the short-term fastest way to a stablecoin is like a MakerDAO. It's like a Bitcoin-backed stablecoin. Because I know like Tether takes a while before they actually deploy. I know they're deployed on Liquid actually, because there are investors there, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, from like the general market, what we've heard is the big companies basically ask for quite a big sum of money in like seven numbers of more. And that's basically something we don't have. So I'm not sure if they would do it because they actually do it for free because they want to be on Bitcoin or not. Because we haven't had that discussion, but that's basically what's held us back and moved us more towards like working together with a founding team to build a MakerDAO. But we'll definitely have that discussion at some point.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for answering that one. Let's finish up with a few more questions. We got about 10, 15 minutes left here. We're talking about going from zero to one. So you guys are just starting off, like you had some great pushes already, you have the testnet off the ground. But getting to this bigger vision, like it's a huge lift. It's a huge lift. I think it's an important lift, but it's a huge lift. You also have some competitors in the wings. We know that there's like some roll-up designs out there. There's the drive chain guys. There's a lot of different ideas like Rootstock that have been around for a while. How do you guys sort of attract people to building on Botanix? What are some things that you think could help get this project into the hands and pockets of a lot of people?
Yeah. Let me first touch on the competition here. I actually invite anyone else that's listening to build layer twos. I want more competition in the sense that like this is a massive market that is really like really low and hasn't broken open in my mind. And the more competition there is, the higher likelihood this whole market breaks open and more or less everyone wins. So that's, I consider that more. I don't really think that's competition. I think the real competition is outside there. In the world of all the non-people who don't believe in Bitcoin, that's a real competition. We need to convince them and come in. But yeah, in general, how do you go from zero to one? I think I'm a very big believer in user experience. So we've made it extremely easy to basically port your Bitcoin over from Bitcoin on the main layer to the second layer and start using it. And also the same user experience for like the developers wanting to deploy smart contracts onto Botanix. That's why we opted to be EVM equivalent. That's a very conscious choice to basically optimize to be absolutely equivalent because I knew the power of that. So those are the basics, make it extremely easy for end users to use it and make it very easy for developers to use it. Then, of course, you've got, you need to have the tech there, you need to have the product, which is there, but then you need to go into like the business side of things and more marketing side of things. And this is a very hard balance to navigate because on the one hand, we are, of course, purely on Bitcoin, but a lot of the developers that we're actually talking to are active on Ethereum, right? It's actually Ethereum dApps. Because actually, when you think about it, our actual competition is not Bitcoin layer twos, our actual competition is Ethereum itself. Because basically the whole market of Ethereum, that $200 billion can actually come to Bitcoin and being built on Bitcoin. Like technology wise, it's now possible.
Can I interrupt for a second? That's a really important statement. I think a lot of people are going to miss. And it kind of goes back to earlier in the conversation, us talking about like what's going to happen from a cultural perspective with this. You said something that was really interesting in the beginning of the podcast, like these products on Ethereum have reached product market fit, right? There's lending protocols on Ethereum that people use daily. Like I know people who park all their funds there and they sit in these tokens and they withdraw stable coins when they need to for life. But otherwise, like they just have their money parked in these things. And these are like normal people. To me, it looks like you're kind of going after like Ethereum in a way that a lot of people just aren't willing to do. A lot of people are kind of sticking with the roadmap of like monetizing Bitcoin, getting Bitcoin to be a bigger dollar value, but you're going after the product market fit. And I just want to see like kind of like narrow in on that point if I'm correct there.
No, you're fully correct. No, we are going after Ethereum and their dApps. That's absolutely the case. And that's the very hard thing to navigate, because from a personal perspective, I'm a very big Bitcoiner. Maybe it's like Tether, who's like big Bitcoiners, but active on Ethereum. But I want to see all of that built on Bitcoin. But basically, a lot of the users, a lot of the people that actually use a lot of those applications, they consider themselves more Ethereans and more active on the Ethereum ecosystem. However, a lot of those people still have Bitcoin in their cold wallet. They still have a loft somewhere from Bitcoin. And they often also realize that Bitcoin is the most secure decentralized money. So it's out there. And I think it will just take a little bit of time and a little bit of applications and using it for them to come back over and to Bitcoin. I think that will switch will happen. I think that will result, that will definitely impact the Bitcoin culture more, because basically all those applications, everything that has reached, I'm always been a big believer that everything that has reached product market fit outside of Bitcoin will reach product market fit on Bitcoin. I had this theory before the ordinals, and the ordinals just showed that. I think we just don't have the infrastructure yet for it to be built, but it will absolutely happen. It's a very interesting balance where we are, like, between Bitcoin and Ethereum. On the one hand, we're talking to a lot of Ethereum developers, but on the other hand, we're talking also to a lot of the Bitcoin holders.
Awesome. Okay, I'm glad we kind of narrowed in on that. Let's go to the last part of the show, Bitcoin miners and fees, for miners who have been patiently listening through words like EVM or sidechains, stuff like that, and aren't into that stuff as much. This is your moment to shine. Bitcoin fees, kind of the holy grail for Bitcoin miners out there who are looking at the Coinbase reward decreasing every 4 years. What does this sort of offer for them? What could a fully flourishing Botanix ecosystem with lots of different applications look like for Bitcoin miners? And I'll even give you a range, maybe like, you know, on the low side, some adoption, medium side, good adoption, then like high side. How do you kind of see this playing out?
In terms of fees on Botanix or fees on the main layer?
I think both would be important to get to, because Bitcoin miners could, you know, build out these applications on top of chain as well. So,
yes, yeah, exactly. I think this is a very interesting topic, because my conversations with Bitcoin miners has basically shown me that they're actually wary of sidechains and second layers, because it would take activity away from the base layer. And the assumption, direct assumption there, is that it would lower the fees. That's absolutely incorrect. I actually am a big believer that that's absolutely not the case. And the reasoning is this: one, we're of course a second layer, so every peg in, peg out, we also need to post back to Bitcoin quite often. So those are already standard transactions that will happen either way. But then when you look at Ethereum, basically what happens is, the more activity you bring to Bitcoin, the more the fees goes up. So like the more people that will basically join DEXs or lending protocols or a bunch of other different things on Botanix, they will eventually also use Bitcoin main chain. And so I think this will actually absolutely explode the miner fees way more than a lot of people realize, because basically it brings just a lot of utility, a lot of activity, a lot of users back to Bitcoin. Because that also means, like, if people want to use Botanix, they'll send Bitcoin from their exchange to Botanix, which is an on-chain transaction, etc. And so you'll have a lot of those different movements. So what it means, I think, with the fees that we've seen right now with the ordinals, low end, I could see a 2x happening, like the fees would double. I think that is assuming that Botanix has a lot of traction. Think more than 50 million TVL, so to speak, right? Higher end, I think like a 5x or a 10x increase of the miner fees. This is all assuming that Botanix is really successful and there's a lot of activity on Botanix. Outside of that, there is now actually a super big opportunity for any Bitcoin holders to start earning yield on your Bitcoin. And I think a lot of Bitcoin miners are actually sleeping on this. Actually, a lot of Bitcoiners are actually sleeping on this. Like your Bitcoin just sits there and doesn't earn any yield. Now, nobody wants to use a centralized party, but basically with Botanix, since we run a proof of stake on Bitcoin, you can stake your Bitcoin and you get all the transaction fees and gas fees that are happening on Botanix are all Bitcoin. So you get all those gas fees and transaction fees back as rewards. And to give numbers here, on Ethereum, the total staking rewards are $5 billion a year. That's absolutely massive. So basically, if you have the activity of Ethereum and you bring that to Botanix, suddenly you can earn $5 billion in Bitcoin yield or in Bitcoin staking rewards. And I think a lot of Bitcoin miners think about, the base fees, but there's also coming like very soon, like becoming like a very big opportunity also start earning yield on your Bitcoin. Now, in terms of how big that yield will be, I think in the beginning that can be like up to 20% in initial stages or even higher. Eventually, that will drop logarithmically, probably like 10%, 15% to like 7, 8%, which is actually a very big potential.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge amount. I want to go to the yield part. So the yield will come from all the different financial applications built on top of Botanix and transaction fees for people using those applications. What do you say to people who say like, we don't want that in Bitcoin, and they're looking back at Terra Luna, they're looking back at some of these past Ethereum projects that have like crashed and burned. They don't want that on top of Bitcoin. I'm in favor of like the market allowing to do its thing, right? Like whatever happens, happens, and do your own research before like aping into a token. That being said, a lot of Bitcoiners just want the base layer to be super simple and they don't want those applications because they don't want to be associated with it. Do you think that's going to be like a large part of concern if you start like kind of marketing the yield or talking about the yield? Obviously, you're not marketing the yield here, but like yield will come and that will attract miners.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, so to clarify where the yield comes from is, it's like on Bitcoin, like the Bitcoin miners, you get those transaction fees, right? Same thing that will happen on Botanix. So all the transaction fees, all the gas fees, which is basically what you pay for like deploying smart contracts or using smart contracts. All those gas fees and fees will return to the stakers. So the people who are actually running the proof of stake on top of Bitcoin or who are running the spider chain. And so it all depends on activity there. So there's definitely an incentive for all the stakers to have more activity. How I think about it is money is 50% of every transaction in the world. That also means evil transaction. That also means other transaction. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners would agree with me that governments shouldn't censor anything of money in the world. Like if a terrorist exchanges or pays in dollar, it's not the fault of the dollar, it's the fault of the terrorist. And so if you go to a world that is running on Bitcoin, everything will be running on Bitcoin. And so also the things that you don't like or maybe that you don't fully align with will also be happening on Bitcoin. And I think we kind of have to accept that because that's eventually where we're going to go to. That's from like 10 years from now or 15 years from now when we are on a Bitcoin reserve currency. That's where we're going to end up. And so I think we're slowly going into that path. And I think, we'll have to realize that's where the end goal is or the end state is.
Love it. Okay, let's finish up here. Tell us a little bit about where we can find Botanix, follow along. And you guys just launched a testnet. So if people want to go and play around with that, where can they go and find that application?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is botanixlabs.xyz. I would definitely recommend everyone trying out the testnet. When you see this, it takes like 5 minutes, but there's always a big difference between explaining an idea and seeing it in actual real life. And so I would definitely recommend to go there and have a trial. And that's basically the moment that will like blow your mind. It's like, holy shit, like suddenly you have Bitcoin in your MetaMask, you have Bitcoin on all the EVM applications and you can actually see it. And that is actually very, very big. I would say definitely also follow the Twitter. That's where we do all our official announcements. And that's at Botanix Labs.
Awesome. Willem, thank you so much for joining the show. For miners who are interested in learning about this protocol, definitely go check that out. I think as a lot of miners who listen to the show do know, like there's a lot of these things coming to market right now. It's important to know about them. So we'll include some of those links in the show notes. But Willem, thanks for joining the show again. We'll talk with you again here soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Will.